What is going on? It is the Sports Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you on a Tuesday evening as basketball has arrived. Media day is over. Training camp has opened. Basketballs are going in hoops. Everyone is excited, including myself and my friend Shane Young, who is today's guest. We're going to get to Shane in just a second. But before we do so, folks, it is time to talk a little bit about fantasy hoops. Do you remember who led you to Tyrese Halliburton, Deontay Murray, Terry Rozier, and Mikal Bridges before any other rank list? That's right. It was the Brewski 150. And you probably turned those huge wins into some cash, didn't you? Great. Well, the Brewski 150 is out right now, today, right now. That is 7:39 p.m. in Los Angeles. It is out now to those that got in early. If you didn't get in early, there's still time to jump and grab your Brewski 150 now. Head to sportsethos.com, click on the premium tab to grab membership or draft guide today. And yes, to answer your most important question, the Brewski 150 is included in both options. Check back daily for more new features and go dominate your leagues again with Sports Ethos. Speaking of dominating, he dominates it with his articles. Shane Young of Forbes, he just released an article about Kawhi and PG, and PG's certainly a guy that he knows quite well, and he's back on the Sports Ethos podcast. Shane, how are you, man?
I'm great, Brandon. Definitely appreciate the awesome intro there. You're the best at it. Definitely the best in the business. I'm glad to be back on, and, you know, I'm a little concerned that we're just like 3 or 4 days away from basketball. I'm not prepared.
I know, me neither. I think it's now 3 days away from the Clippers opener, which is crazy. I mean, it's one of those things where it doesn't feel like the season just ended, but at the same time, it feels like it's weird that basketball is starting now. I don't know if it's because the NFL is going on and baseball is coming down the stretch. And for myself, Premier League is going on. The World Cup is just around the corner. There's so many damn sports to keep track of. And now we've got basketball to keep track of.
Oh, of course. And, you know, all my friends always say, especially locally here where it's just college dominated, they always say, you know, they don't pay attention to the NBA till Christmas. And, you know, it's hard to really blame them in some aspects because of the NFL going on, at, you know, in full force right now. So I don't know. But I will say this ain't a football podcast, but seeing all the NFL quarterbacks, the way they're throwing, I feel like NBA should be the dominated one right now.
And there's so many good storylines this year in the NBA. I mean, you just look at the Brooklyn Nets and what's going on there. And then you look at Phoenix, the two teams that everyone thought were going to be the top in each of their conferences. And DeAndre Ayton comes out today and says he hasn't spoken to Monty Williams since that infamous face-to-face between the two of them. It's crazy. And then you've got other teams that are building. I mean, Zion's back with the Pelicans. And, of course, the Clippers. They finally have Kawhi and PG healthy. And that's why we're here. We're here to talk about the Los Angeles Clippers. They're going to open up on Monday, October 3rd. Is what I have. I think that feels wrong, doesn't it?
They play on Friday, the 30th.
Yeah, Friday. It's not on the Yahoo thing. I said 3 days. They do play Friday the 3rd, or rather Monday, October 3rd against the Blazers on KTLA. But they do open up in 3 days. So what we need to talk about first is Kawhi and PG. I mean, it's the most important topic for the Clippers and their success. And it's something that the Clippers aren't used to having is Kawhi and PG. I mean, obviously, all of last season, Kawhi was out because of that injury that he suffered in the playoffs. What were your impressions? Because, first of all, you were at Media Day yesterday. What were your impressions on the vibe around those two and not only their health, but also just what it's like for the two of them to be back and ready to play basketball after sitting out for so long?
To me, Brandon, I think the number one word that I come from Media Day from and felt that it was a good summarization of how everything was comfortable. I feel like Kawhi and Paul were just comfortable around everybody, including the media. And, you know, for Kawhi, someone like that that doesn't like talking at all, regardless if it's to family or friends or whoever it is, I think it was pretty awesome to see that he was in a lighthearted mood, playful, joking with a lot of the teammates, as I wrote in my article, you know, chopped up with John Wall quite a bit. I think it's just awesome to see that they are, I guess, embracing this new culture. And, you know, I think you have to really point to Reggie Jackson for jump starting and kickstarting that change and how the team feels with, around each other. And I really just see an openness with Kawhi. I see, you know, from a basketball perspective, Paul is extremely excited to get back on the floor with him because, you know, he alluded to how tough and how difficult it was for him and Reggie, you know, when in the games that Paul was playing before the UCL injury, you know, all the burden is on them to create. That's before the Norm Powell trade and everything like that. So I think having more creators on the floor is something that was a common denominator that you heard from a lot of guys, but specifically Paul talking about how it's just going to open up things on the floor to have his guy back. And I think the brotherhood between those guys is stronger than ever. This is a duo that, you know, you don't really see them talking a lot, but they are as close as any two teammates in the league.
You mentioned talking, and it's I'm glad you did, because some of the chatter around Clippers Twitter today is that Kawhi's a little more vocal than he was previously. And what's interesting about that, Shane, is that I've spoken on this podcast with numerous different people that didn't feel like this team outside of Patrick Beverley really had somebody that was going to be vocal on the floor and was going to hold their teammates accountable. Kind of feels like after sitting and watching everything unfold last year, perhaps Kawhi has realized, hey, in order to take this team to the next level, they need to follow me, not only by example, but also by words, because they do look up to me. Does that sound like something that makes sense?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Ty Lue struggles to kind of explain this because everyone always asks him. I feel like every time someone asks him about Kawhi, the leadership component gets brought up and they ask him if he's been more vocal as a leader, you know, throughout workouts and stuff like that. And Ty really doesn't know what to say because, yes, Kawhi does want to, and he's trying to be more vocal around the team. But still, when you talk about leadership styles and leadership traits, leading by example is still going to be Kawhi's number one. Like, his like the way he speaks to teammates and the way he is going to be voicing his leadership through his voice, like that's not going to overtake what he does on the floor. And as you said, they all look up to him. I mean, just listen to Reggie Jackson talk about Kawhi, you would think he's a god out there. So, you know, I think it's true that Kawhi wants to be more vocal, but I just think at the end of the day, he's not going to be the vocal leader for this team. He's going to be a vocal leader for the team. While you can point to, like, you know, Pat Bev and LeBron, those guys are like, they're going to hold everyone accountable. They speak up at, in games and in huddles and practice sessions. I don't think Kawhi, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he's really done that in a game, maybe once or twice throughout his Clippers tenure. I kind of rambled on here a bit, but I think John Wall is going to be the vocal leader for the team. You could just kind of see that that vibe around him when he's around guys. Like he's a veteran himself. Like everyone on the team respects him too, despite him not playing the last year plus. I think he is going to step into that role and kind of help out Paul and Kawhi. So, you know, I don't think this team is going to have a guy like Pat Bev to really rally around. But I think it's going to be by committee, and Kawhi is going to.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that goes, Shane, because if it's by committee, then is one voice going to carry more weight than another? And those voices need to be in sync, you know? So I'm curious to see if they're able to do that and establish that chemistry where Kawhi, PG, John Wall, like you said, whether they're taking turns and being the leader there and being the guy that everyone's looking up to and listening to, or if there is one guy that does end up taking the torch as someone like a Pat Bev that is the rah-rah type of guy that's going to lead the troops.
Yeah, Marcus Morris also said during his session with the Zubats that he is going to be one of the best leaders for the team. Actually, I believe his quote was one of the best leaders in the NBA. as well as the top 3-point shooter. So quite a lot of Mook stuff that we got from EDA as well. Yeah. He's very high on himself, as he should be, I guess, and the team. But yeah, you're totally right. I think eventually you're going to see maybe one voice trying to transcend the others. And really, I don't think it could hurt this Clippers team. They need it. It's not something that's going to hold them back from winning, ultimately, if they don't have someone like a Pat Bev. But because, I mean, they should be top contenders regardless. But it is something that they're going to face adversity in the first or second round in a few months, or, you know, next spring. And they're going to have need someone to kind of get them over that roadblock.
Yeah, you just want to be careful, because you just mentioned Marcus Morris too. So now that's four names that we've now mentioned as guys that are going to be leaders. And that immediately brings me back to the Lob City Clippers. And you have Blake Griffin and Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan, all guys that want to have a say. But it does feel like, to put a bow on this one, going back to what you originally said, the comfort that this team has makes this a little bit different than the Lob City Clippers. It feels like chemistry around this team is just infinitely better than what the chemistry on the team was back with Lob City Clippers, despite the fact that team, as J.J. Redick has said numerous times, was one of his favorite teams to play on, and they got along really well. It's just that when push came to shove and there needed to be that voice, there was just some arguing about who that voice was going to be. So that's my only concern, is that you have numerous voices and someone tries to stand above the other.
You know what I think is hilarious about that is my last point here is that I truly feel like when Kawhi speaks up and says something and raises his voice and puts some bass in it and tries to get people to follow his actions, they do. They just shut up and do it. I feel like if Chris Paul did that, which he did many times with the Clippers in the Lob City era, they kind of gave him a smart remark or they kind of just didn't listen to him. Mm-hmm. But if it's Kawhi, I guess the two championships carry weight and all that he's done in the playoffs, like they kind of just shut up and do it.
Yeah. And that's going to be important. Just, you know, there needs to be Kawhi that leads by example. And if someone needs a talking to, they got to talk and do it. I'm really excited to watch this team this year. And I mean, this goes without saying, Shane, but you just hope this team stays healthy, because there's so much talent on this roster and they're so incredibly deep. And Ty Lue has talked about it, that guys are going to have to sacrifice. And whether that is minutes or shots, these guys need to be willing to take a back seat at times. And that means that you're going to be able to have a guy like Terrence Mann that could go and play 35 minutes like he did last year, but then he may only play 5 to 10 minutes in another game. It just depends on what the matchup brings. And that's one thing, comparing again to the Lob City Clippers, it feels like this team is going to sacrifice and be willing to sacrifice more so than any other team, because these guys want to be here. You look at Robert Covington and what he has said about the Clippers, and now that he's at peace with basketball and how he loves the game. And you look at Nicholas Batum and what he did in his revitalization with the Clippers. It just feels like guys are coming here and it's a great landing spot and they're happy to be here. And if that means playing 10 to 15 minutes less than they would be on a team that's not contending, they're happy to do so, you know?
For sure. And I always will go back to, it's one of those quotes that is just seared into your brain. I'll always go back to DeMarcus Cousins, either during the playoffs or right before the regular season ended. I believe I asked him about, you know, just what's it been like being with the Clippers in general compared to the other stops. And, you know, this is 2021 season. And he just went on and on raving about the team, like just the culture, the organization, the respect level from top to bottom. He even talked about, you know, how everyone behind the scenes, like the chefs and the PR people, like everyone just treats each other the way they're supposed to. So, I mean, that was one good anecdote about just the team camaraderie in general, the organizational camaraderie. But, you know, about your point regarding sacrifices, I can just kind of sense, Brandon, I'm curious if you believe this as well, like the games that Kawhi or Paul or both are going to be like announced out beforehand, you know, maybe the day before, the morning before, or the morning of. Like, I just feel like Terrence, Luke, all these guys that are kind of like on the fringes for minutes, they're going to be happy. They're going to be ecstatic that not because their guys are out, but because they have the chance to shine and they know they deserve to have 25 minutes a night in a normal rotation. Amir is even going to get those chances whenever they're shorthanded, which, let's be honest, they're going to be shorthanded. Like, we can sit here and play the
injuries happen.
We can sit here and play the game. If we hope they stay healthy, this is going to be the year finally. But you know that, like, Kawhi and Paul are probably going to miss 20 apiece. So the opportunities will be there for sure.
Yeah, and that's I agree with you. And I think you look at this team, and you've got guys like Norman Powell, who has said that he thinks he can be an all-star. And you look at that type of quote, and you say, okay, well, that seems kind of crazy, considering that he's going to be the third option, most likely behind Kawhi and PG. But then you look and you say, okay, well, how many games is Norman Powell going to be the number two option when Kawhi and PG or Kawhi or PG are sitting? And there's going to be a decent amount. So he's certainly going to have the chance to rack up numbers. And then you just look at the rest of the roster and what they can do. And you look at Reggie Jackson and Wall and Marcus Morris and Batum and Zoo and Covington. I mean, there's so much there. And I think this is a great time to bring in the question that we got on Twitter from Danny. And he said, are we in danger of overestimating how good this team is based on, if we're basing it on them beating Utah, now that we know that Utah was fraudulent to begin with? And it's a good question, because the Clippers obviously came back in that series against Utah and did so because of some insane shooting from Terrence Mann and obviously a great game at home. But you look at that Utah team and they got beat 2 years in a row with a small ball lineup. They're not that good. They blew it all up. Mitchell and Gobert clearly didn't have the chemistry that a team should have. The Clippers then go and lose to the Phoenix Suns, obviously without Kawhi Leonard. And so that's the important part for me, is that I don't think we're overestimating this team because of, one, they got to the Western Conference Finals and nearly the NBA Finals without Kawhi Leonard. Number two is that I think they're better than they were when they went to the Western Conference Finals. I think Robert Covington is vastly underrated as a basketball player. He's incredibly good as a 3-and-D guy. I think Norman Powell being added to this roster is huge. And John Wall, who knows what you're going to get from him, but I think he's going to add something to this team as well, because it seems like he as well is at peace with where he is and back in love with the sport after dealing with some stuff off the court, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But it's one of those things where it feels like this team is much deeper. It's much better. So yes, I understand that you could think that we're overrating this team, but I think we're properly rating this team as long as they're healthy. Now, if they get hurt, different story. I mean, then we go back to the same old Clippers, and they're probably not going to get to where they want to be. But as long as they're healthy, I think we're properly rating this team. What about you?
Absolutely. And now I will say, I think it's a great question, and I know you agreed as well. It's a great question to kind of set the baseline for where you think the team is, because you do fall in danger of overrating a team just because of what they did two seasons ago. You know, it's kind of crazy to think it's two seasons ago, but only, I guess, what, like 14 or 15 months ago. Kind of wild. But for me, I'm going to agree with you that it's not overestimating, it's not overrating the team, because if you had to rate what that Clippers unit was that was facing the Phoenix Suns, so without Kawhi Leonard, who was hurt, and because that's the team that beat Utah. You know, I think if you had to rate that team, I would give them like a 6.5 or 7 out of 10. You know, I think this team's like a 9. Like, this team's just way better. You know, and if your 10 out of 10 is the KD Warriors, I think they're under that. Like, they're clearly under that. But talent wise, you cannot tell me, you can't name me honestly a single team of our generation, of our the last couple decades, that has been this talented from 1 to 12. You just can't do it. I mean, you get the top heavy 1 to 5, like the Durant Warriors. That's an anomaly. But now, I think they're just loaded with so much insurance at every spot. So yeah, if something does go crazy during the season with injuries, they have enough to win in Charlotte on a Wednesday night, where I don't think that team without Kawhi, you know, we saw it last year, they won 42 games. I think this team's their floor is closer to the 50 bar. It's definitely a loaded unit that I just believe is going to win a lot of games and have a lot of I guess energy and motivation to get a top seed, because, you know, they were the number 2 seed under Doc Rivers that 1 year, and then after that the 4 seed. I just feel like they're going to want home court advantage throughout.
You know what's interesting, Shane? It feels like, as good as this Clippers team is, the national media hasn't quite picked up on it, which is very unusual for a team that is projected to be the favorite in the Western Conference. I mean,
I'm seeing a lot of people, by the way, not to cut you off. I'm seeing a lot of people that are saying, oh, I forgot Norman Powell was on that team.
Yeah. It certainly feels like it. I mean, I'm a big Dan Patrick guy. I love his radio show. And whenever they bring up the Clippers, they're all very skeptical about the Clippers being a favorite. And they're all unsure, like, oh, the same Clippers that don't make the playoffs or the same Clippers that always get hurt. And it's because of injuries. And I think everyone's rightly hesitant because the Clippers always have an injury that comes their way, whether it's Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, or you go back and it's Chris Paul, Blake Griffin. Feels like an injury always comes. But you have to look at a team as if they're healthy. And this Clippers team, built as it is currently constructed, is, I think, the deepest team, like you said, in the NBA, and could easily be the best team in the NBA. And the one thing they have that not many other teams have, I mean, you look at what Boston was able to do last year with all the switching and what Tatum and Brown mm-hmm. do. Kawhi and PG are just as good as Tatum and Brown, if not better. And they went to the NBA Finals last year. So, and it just feels like this Clippers team is not being looked at like one of the great teams. And I'll be interested to see how that narrative goes over the first week or two of the season, especially if the Clippers beat the Lakers in the first week.
And it's so weird that you're right. It's so weird that they're looked at or not looked at that way, because I'm sure you agree, like PG last year, obviously his first, you know, quarter of the season before he got hurt, was just all NBA level type stuff. And I think the national consensus flipped on him to where obviously guys like you and I, like, we understood his impact. We understood how great of a guy, great of a player he was, but I feel like everyone still made fun of him. Everyone still, you know, had their jokes and had to chime in with some negativity every time his name was brought up. I feel like last year kind of switched around, and I think now he's more universally liked. I wouldn't say fully, but like it's definitely more than that bubble year, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So if the perception of PG's changed and Kawhi is still Kawhi, and the team is obviously, if your number three option is Norman Powell, who shot like 8,000% last year, like, I just don't know what the hesitation is from the national media. Maybe it's because Kawhi hasn't played in 15 months. Maybe it's because they think and they're projecting a drop off. And I can't blame them. ACL tears are so tricky. Like, you kind of forget, I guess I'll speak for myself, like, I kind of forget that Kawhi even tore his ACL because it's been so long. I just feel like he's coming back from a hiatus of nothing. So that, you know, you have to assume that there's going to be some drop off. But I don't know, man, the way he's shooting jumpers, I know they're wide open in practice, just absolutely wide open shots, and you should make them. The way he just is moving, I always gauge it by how quick a guy is on their first step, and it looks like that crossover into a jump shot looks smooth, just, you know, again, wild up in practice sessions. But I just feel like the speed is going to be there for him because he took a full year off. He's not rushing back at all. This was the perfect approach for them. And I think the national consensus is going to be way lower on the Clippers. I've seen projections have them as like the 4 or 5 seed. I just don't really see, unless injuries get in the way, of course, that they're lower than a 3.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's interesting because you look at Paul George, and obviously he suffered a torn ACL and he came back, and now Kawhi's coming at it. It feels like the torn ACL is the NBA's version of Tommy John surgery in baseball. It feels like it's a rite of passage for a lot of these guys that it just ends up happening where these guys...
PG broke his leg.
Oh, he broke his leg. Sorry. You're right. I meant leg injury.
Of a thing. A really severe leg injury.
Yeah, there you go. Breaking a leg, which is worse, breaking your leg or tearing your ACL? I mean, they're both pretty terrible, but nonetheless, it's somebody coming back from a major leg injury, and it feels like it's doable. You're able to come back from it. And I want to talk about something that's going to be interesting to watch this season. And you want to obviously look at this team and say, okay, so what's going to happen? Who's going to start? Who's going to be on the floor together? And I don't think we can answer that question because it feels like it's going to vary game to game. And you look at the small ball lineups, and that's something that's been brought up so far in the first couple of days, both yesterday in media day and today in training camp, and there was some talk of Terrence Mann possibly playing in that Bruce Brown role, as Justin Wilson of LA Clippers Film likes to say. That could possibly be something that happens. Zoo is obviously the traditional center, but there's been talk about him coming out early in the first quarter so that he can join the second unit in the second quarter and help them rebound. Ty Lue mentioned that today. And then there's talk about Norman Powell. Like I said earlier, he thinks he can be an all-star, but will he be the sixth man? Will he start at shooting guard some games? It feels like with this team, there's more questions than answers right now. We don't know who's going to start of Batum or Marcus Morris. We don't know how much Luke Kennard is going to play. And Marcus Morris, everyone forgets, is one of the best three-point shooters. Same with Luke Kennard. There's just so much this team has. I think one of the biggest storylines coming into this training camp, and correct me if I'm wrong, Shane, is that there's a lot of unknowns. We don't know how this team is going to work and who's going to play together on the floor, which I think is something that you don't normally see with a team that's projected to win as many games as the Clippers. Does that concern you, or is it something that's more intriguing than concerning?
It's way more intriguing than concerning. If it was Doc Rivers leading the team, it would be concerning. I just wouldn't have trust or faith that he could figure it out. But, you know, Ty Lue said at Media Day that his mind was going crazy over the summer because he had so many ideas that he had them on paper and he had them in his head, but like you can't put them into practice. You can't get everyone on the floor together. Obviously, people are doing their individual workouts and such. So I just feel like because he said that, I immediately, as I was sitting there, was thinking, yeah, the first 20 games, maybe that's even less. Maybe you go to Christmas. Maybe you go to the first 30 games. It's just experimentation. And I'm totally fine with that because of how deep they are. If this was the 2019-20 team where you have like liabilities out there, like a Trez or like a Lou Will, just for defensive purposes, I wouldn't like as much experimentation with stuff, but I feel like now, because you have really no weak links, as PG said at Media Day, like they just don't really have any weak links out there. Now, of course, he's not going to say this, but you know, Luke Kennard defensively is a bit of a weak link, and, yeah, and others, you know, maybe Reggie out there as well in too many lineups. But I feel like you get to Christmas, Brandon, and whatever the lineup data says from there is kind of what you lean to for the final, say, I don't know, what is that, 40 plus games of the season. So, I mean, Christmas is going to be my barometer, where they are record-wise, where they are in terms of their offense and defense, and kind of what they're doing in terms of minutes between, you know, is John playing more than Reggie? Is Kawhi playing the four at all? I do expect him to play the four. I know Clippers Twitter has pushed back on me on that, but I'm still expecting him to go at the four a lot while they try out all these different guys at the five.
Yeah, I think that's certainly valid. I'm surprised people are pushing back at you. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer that we're going to see a Wall, Powell, PG, Kawhi, and like a Covington or a Batum or a Morris type of lineup. It feels like that's a no-brainer that's going to happen, and that would mean Kawhi plays the four. And we could sit here and we could have a conversation. Okay, so who do we think is going to start? Marcus Morris or Nicholas Batum?
You don't know.
We really don't know. And I think it's a waste of time to sit here and try and figure out who's going to do what. Because last year we looked and we saw Ty Lue went with 10-game sample sizes. And Reggie Jackson didn't play in a 10-game sample size. It feels like that's what he's going to do again. He's going to go with a 10-game sample size. He's going to see how a certain rotation works. He's going to see how certain guys gel together and go from there. Now,
and I'm already prepared, man. Like, I'm already prepared for people to be calling for Ty's job if they lose games they're not supposed to lose because he went small against a big lineup and they got killed on the glass. You know, like, it's that stuff that really irks me about social media. I know I'm trying to go on a rant here, but, like, it's really annoying whenever you see a coach that's clearly trying to gain an advantage somewhere else and it kind of backfires, and then they obviously think that he can't coach anymore. You know, it's stuff like that that's going to be annoying in the first quarter of the season.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's way too early to judge anything. I think the Clippers will be fine. They have all the talent in the world as long as they're healthy. And I've said that a bunch of times already in this podcast. Then, and that's the key, then they're going to be fine. I want to talk about the John Wall versus Reggie Jackson aspect, but I don't think it's right to go into that before discussing John Wall and what he wrote and the Players Tribune article that he wrote about the mental health that he struggled with and the possibility of debating suicide and how he had a lot of stuff going on that we didn't know about. We didn't know about the infections that he got from his surgery. We didn't know about his mother passing away and what that impact had on him. And it really feels like we're going into this season, and this kind of goes with the theme of the pod, having no idea what to expect from John Wall, because it certainly could be a guy that is back to the form that he had 3 or 4 years ago, but it also could be someone that, you know, Reggie Jackson's better than, and he's not playing very many minutes. But it feels like the most likely scenario is something in between. What's the vibe that you got from John Wall and the discussion about him from his teammates yesterday during media day?
Well, yeah, first off, I thought what he wrote was powerful just because, like, again, the unknown. Like, we didn't know about all that. And I think it actually put in perspective that you should be very careful what you say about people and players, but more so like people that you don't know what's going on. Because, you know, whether or not it's a whole nother discussion, whether or not these athletes should be, engaged on social media and reading everything that is said about them. You know, PG has gotten into his head about that type of stuff as well in the bubble, but like they do, and you're not going to, stop that. Like they're going to see things that you say. So I think people should be mindful of what they're talking about. And again, you never know what someone's going through, and that really hit home for Wall. And you know, it helps that other players on the team have gone through that stuff as well. Like Robert Covington, who he sat with next to media day to it for his press conference. You could tell they both kind of shared that bond about going through some mental struggles and getting over the hump. And I think that that's going to help John being on a team that always has his back from a head coach that is more like a brother and like a big brother to these guys than a coach. That you kind of get that sentiment up and down the roster, because he's not, you know, this older guy that's kind of barking orders. He's kind of, you know, he'll visit you at your hotel room and see how you're doing, check in on you. That, you know, that's just the Ty Lue way. I feel like just the entire atmosphere is going to lend itself to Wall having the best year he's had in a while, just because of that. And that's before you even get on the court. So first, I thought that was awesome that he did that and was transparent about it. It's not something he even had to do. So I'm just grateful that he kind of shared it. And then also, like, I think he's turning a corner in his career where I think I was on this podcast or I was somewhere else. And I said, like, I'm really hoping he don't come in and try to dictate who's starting or kind of like say, I'm going to be the starter and I'm going to get this many minutes or I'm going to be unhappy. He really does. And I think it's genuine. I'm going to believe it's genuine until it's not. I believe that he is going to accept any role. And even if that's like, hey, you're playing 15 to 20 minutes, which I don't think will be the case. Like from everything we've seen in training camp, he looks speedy. He looks healthy. He looks fast. He looks healthy. Like I just think that he's going to be a main rotation player now. So I'm kind of changing my tune on the John Wall stuff. I was kind of down on it at first, but I'm feeling like he and Reggie is going to be some good competitive fire there for that starting spot. So I guess that was just a long way of saying, like, I think it's going to be great for the team that Reggie and John have that bond, that they are joking all the time with each other. And you know, always high fiving, always, you know, talking and yelling at each other during their press conferences. I think it's going to be great that they're going to have a little bit of juice to see who gets more minutes.
It's funny because you look at the Lakers and they've got obviously Pat Bev and Russell Westbrook, and now you've got John Wall and Reggie Jackson with the Clippers. And
yeah,
there's two guard battles going on in Los Angeles, and with the Clippers, with John Wall, I think that you look at how much he's being paid, and I think that's a weird thing to say, but him taking the money he took, I think certainly is acknowledgement that, hey, he is not that max guy anymore, and he is here to just try and win and whatever it does take. And you can't compare him to Russell Westbrook, and even though they're both speedy guys and they both have the explosiveness and they both could be bad shooters at times, because it feels like the Clippers won't let John Wall get to the point where Russell Westbrook got, where he was trying to control the offense and he was doing things that hurt the team. I don't think that'll happen with the Clippers. I think, like we said in the beginning of the podcast, there's so many different guys on this team that are willing to speak out, and you have Ty Lue as a coach that's willing to make changes, that I don't think it'll get to that point, which is a big difference than what Russell Westbrook obviously facing with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, yeah. John has, not only does he have the self-awareness, I think, now. In Washington, it kind of felt like he was, I don't even know the way to say it, really. Like I just feel like he really dictated what was going on, and it was going to be hard to really say anything to him. But now, as you said, the salary, the role, the environment around him, just the team, like all his friends. I feel like he has a lot of friends on this team. Like, you know, if things got to a certain point, he would either be talked to or Ty would just change the rotation, and that'd be the end of that. Because we've seen, man, Ty does not care. Even the guys that he loves the most on the team, he's going to tell them, hey, man, it's not your night.
Okay, so let's get into it. John Wall or Reggie Jackson? Who ends up being, who do we think ends up being the starter? Because I honestly, I have no idea. I really don't think we have any clue whatsoever. Reggie Jackson, certainly chemistry-wise, fits very well with this team. But that being said, I think that John Wall has been a starter for almost all of his career. And it could make sense to have him be a guy that works with Kawhi and PG and gets him on track to start, where we know Reggie Jackson can cook, and either as a starter or as a bench guy. So I honestly, I have no idea who I'd like to see start. I think I kind of like to see Reggie Jackson start, just because I think he's earned that based on what he's done in the last couple of years. So I would lean Reggie's way. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so John has started 601 of 613 games. He's only come off the bench 12 times. I think it's because of injuries. So I remember doing a Spaces. I was talking in a Spaces with Tomer and Justin Russo, and I said that I said basically what you just did. I echoed that. I said Reggie deserves a start until he doesn't, because of him leading that team last year. Yeah, he was inefficient because he was in a difficult role, but I just feel like now spacing Reggie, catch and shoot Reggie is going to be awesome. I think he's going to shoot over 40% from three and going to be dynamic for them. But if you're asking me who I think will start, I think it'll be John Wall. And you can just kind of feel it, because I always kind of go by, like, when Ty Lue talks, or when Kawhi or PG, whoever is talking about the team and the things that are their strengths now, John is always mentioned. John is always mentioned as this, like, transition killer that they didn't have, as this downhill passer, you know, could get into the lane and spray out for corner threes. Yes, Reggie can do that. I just think John does it even better. And you know, I've kind of flipped. I think, although I want Reggie to start for the continuity, and you know, he's going to make it so much easier for Kawhi and Paul to get into the paint, just because he's a threat. And I think defenses will respect him a lot more than they will John Wall on that perimeter. I think they're going to go with John to start, just because just to see how it looks. As we said at the top of this, like, you know, experimentation. And that doesn't mean that John starting the first 10 or 20 games means that's going to be what it is in the playoffs. But I think they're going to want to get that look and see, like, okay, is this for real, or is he going to be relegated to the bench?
Yeah, it's definitely the storyline to watch in training camp, and who ends up getting the nod. And we spoke earlier, the first game is in just 3 days, and it is indeed on Friday. And the reason why, you go to the sports app on Yahoo and it doesn't have them playing the Clippers, is because they're playing an Israeli team, is why they're not playing an NBA team. So they have a game on Friday against an Israeli team, and then they play.
So when they lose that game, Twitter can overreact.
Yep, exactly. And then October 3rd is when they play against old friend Chauncey Billups and the Blazers. So those are the first two games of the preseason for the Clippers. Fascinated to see what happens with John Wall, Reggie Jackson. And honestly, I think it just depends how John Wall looks. If John Wall, Wall looks good, then there's a chance he starts. If he doesn't look like a guy that's going to be a major factor, then I think it's an easy decision. I think you start Reggie Jackson. So I don't think it's worth even debating right now until we see them play some basketball. I don't think it's worth debating whether we see Marcus Morris or Nicholas Batum as the starter, because we just don't know. I mean, it's very possible Batum probably is the starter, but both those guys were happy coming off the bench last year. And frankly, it's going to happen all year where Batum's going to come off the bench some games and Marcus Morris will come off the bench others.
If I could point out one thing that I'm not sure we're going to get into at all, but like something that does concern me for no particular reason, like we obviously Batum talked today. He didn't talk at media day, so I wasn't around him. But I have no reason to believe this, but I kind of feel like maybe they should be really cautious with Batum this year. I feel like he's had a really good string of injury luck, although he has had some nicks and bruises and things that have kept him out of games. But I just kind of get a sense that they need to take it easy on him because he's getting older. And if you remember, Brandon, like he looked cooked in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Absolutely cooked. And that was 3 years ago or two years ago, something like that. Like I just feel like maybe he shouldn't play as much as the consensus believes.
Well, and Morris has been hurt the last couple of years. I mean, he's been battling knee issues, right? And so it's one of those things where with this team, you have the ability to limit these guys. And so we're going to see games where Marcus Morris sits out. We're going to see games where Marcus Morris gets limited minutes or Nicholas Batum gets limited minutes. So you're going to see everybody. They have a deep team for a reason. And so debating who should start, it really doesn't matter because
it's all about who closes for me.
Exactly. That's who's going to close. And that's the key. And who's going to be there in the postseason as the 8 to 9 guys that Ty Lue can trust. And I think that's really what matters. But what matters now is that the Clippers are healthy and that it seems like they're enjoying playing together and being together. And then Kawhi and PG are back as that 1-2 and they've got the depth around them and John Wall, Reggie Jackson, Robert Covington, Norman Powell. I mean, there's just so much there. There's a lot of excitement that I think people should have about this team, Shane.
Oh yeah. And you know, I think you said this at the top of the show, like all the other media days around the league and Clippers and Denver Nuggets were the only two that were kind of like joyous, or around the Western Conference, I should say, the only two that kind of had nothing bad come out of it, or nothing that was like, oh wow, that's interesting that they said that in a bad way. So I mean, you know, Phoenix, I still believe they're going to be a really good regular season juggernaut if they get this DA situation under control. I think Dallas will, you know, obviously have probably the best player out of all these guys. Luka's just amazing. And like Golden State, that's another team that, you know, defending champions. You didn't hear anything bad about them because obviously they lost depth pieces, but they're going to be back and right in that mix again. So, I mean, Clippers, Denver, and Golden State seem to be sailing pretty smoothly right now.
Yeah, you've got New Orleans, obviously, with that depth. And, I mean, with Ingram and what they could bring with Zion if he's healthy. And they've got a good team. So there's a lot out west to be fearful of. And then of course look at the East, and you still got the Celtics, you got the Nets, you got the Heat, you got lots of teams, the Bulls. There are a lot of teams there, and so it seems like this is going to be a good year for the NBA. Shane, we're going to close it off with this one. I think that's a great place to finish it off. I want you to tell me what you're writing about. Where can people read you? I want you to sell yourself to the people because you deserve to be read as much as possible.
I don't know about that, but I definitely appreciate your kind words, man. And yeah, I just wrote something about 2 hours ago, finished it up as a summary of Kawhi and Paul at Media Day and just the vibe I got from them as being better leaders for the team, capitalizing on this championship window that we kind of established that this team has, because, you know, Kawhi and Paul are not spring chickens. Like they're getting up there. They're still in their, you know, early 30s, but before you know it, it'll be the window will be closing. So I think it's definitely mature for Paul to acknowledge that. He seems very self-aware. So I kind of wrote all about that. You can read it on Forbes Sports. I'll have more as training camp goes along, but more so for me, I'm kind of just waiting around for the regular season so we can get stuff to break down. You know, I'm all about film breakdowns, man. I love the nitty gritty of what goes on the court. So sometimes I'll play the narrative game. Sometimes I'll do the storyline stuff like I've been doing the last couple of days. But yeah, for the season, just wait for my breakdowns.
He's friend of the pod, Shane Young. You can follow him on Twitter at YoungNBA. You can read him on Forbes Sports. He'll be back plenty of times throughout the season. A great fella, Shane. Always appreciate you joining.
Thank you, Brandon. Have a good one, man.
So for Shane at Young NBA, I'm Brandon Marcus at BD Marcus. You can follow the Hoopball, or rather the Ethos Clippers podcast at Ethos Clippers. Of course, go ahead, hit us up. Let me know what you want to hear about. If you've got any questions, feel free to tweet at me at BD Marcus. Rate and review the podcast. Always helps. And of course, don't forget the Brewski 150 is out now. Go win your fantasy leagues. He's Shane. I'm Brandon. Until next time, go Clips.